Welcome to the 1988 American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee Conference in Washington, D.C., Meeting the Challenge. This is tape number 13-402-88A, Arab American Women, Challenges and Triumphs. The moderator is Noah Ismail, and the speakers are James Abarezik, Fedwa El-Gundi, Anand Jabara, and Muna Asali.
Just all the information that has been thrown on you this morning, but I'd appreciate it if you'd encourage all those who are out in the corridor to come in so that you will have an opportunity to proceed with the program. We'll wait a few more minutes.
Women's rights and the place of women in our society. I view the question of equality of women as one of ensuring the maximum number of choices. Opportunity, I think, must be equal. Opportunity must be equal. I don't think there's any question in today's world, despite the great advances made in the women's movement here in the United States, as well as around the world, that women are still accorded second-class status. That must be changed. This is a conference of, by, and for Arab Americans. We deal primarily in Arab issues. While the Arab world has received a great deal of criticism for the way it maintains the status of women, I would have to say that it is only marginally worse there than how women are treated elsewhere. In Israel, for example, women are not allowed to pray on the men's side of the Wailing Wall, although men are allowed on the women's side. In America, women have a long way to go to achieve equality in terms of pay, of jobs, of professional status, and in terms of our society in general. However, women played the major role in the Algerian Revolution and are doing the same in the Palestinian Revolution. In Lebanon, before the country deteriorated, women were rapidly achieving an advanced social status. I use these examples only to point out that the world at large has a long way to go. As a civil rights organization, ADC is obligated not only to end discrimination of people who are born as Arabs, but to seek to end it for those who are born as women as well. As someone once said, we'll all be liberated together. The importance of this particular panel cannot be overemphasized, since what we as Arab Americans do with respect to women's rights and women's equality is the real indication of how committed we are to our principles. I wish to congratulate the panelists as well as the women on ADC's staff who are working to keep this idea alive. Thank you. Now, I also, at this time, before the panelists start, and I thank you for this opportunity to all of you, Nuha, and the rest of the panelists, I want to introduce ADC's president, the lovely and talented Abdine Jabara. I could say, I said lovely and talented, I could have said ravishing and charming, but I think the other fits him better. And he's got a statement to make to this audience. Thank you.
It's said that confession is good for the soul. Not being particularly religious, I'm not sure that how much my soul is going to benefit from what I'm about to do, but I'm here in all seriousness because of a statement I made yesterday that has absolutely no place in the ADC family or in the organization which is committed to equality and the struggle for equal rights for all people. I introduced one of the members of our national board who happens by gender to be a woman in a way that was totally sexist, and I want to apologize publicly to her. And I want to apologize to the men and women in the organization as well, because it was an affront to them as well. Thank you so much.
Well,
We're not going to dwell on this any further, but I want to let you know that not just myself, I know where you're coming from, so I really didn't take any offense, but I guess I did hear from a number of women about that, and I guess the apology really extends beyond me, but to the women of this organization. And apology is very graciously accepted, Abdi. I guess I'm supposed to announce to all of you before we start that all of the panels here at this convention are being taped, and that the tapes are available for sale in the lobby outside the Grand Ballroom, and for you to contact the audio transcript representative in the lobby for further information. I hope that we still have the 2 hours assigned to us, so we will proceed without further ado. Now, this panel, as it says here, Arab American Women, Challenges and Triumphs, I think we would like to put it a little bit in focus before we proceed and invite our panelists to speak. The Arab American, the emergence of the Arab American identity as we know it is a relatively recent phenomenon, one that dates back to about 25 years or so. If you recall, before World War II, most of the Arab immigrants described themselves, identified themselves as Syrian American or Lebanese American, but very, very seldom as Arab American. As such, this new identity differs sharply from the identity of the second and third generation Arab immigrants, who for the most part are much more fully assimilated in the mainstream of the American society. Now, unlike the women of the first wave of immigrants, the Arab American immigrant came to this country, the Arab American women who came to this country from the 50s on up, where most of them came with the advantages of education, language, and special skills. Many of them have gone on to pursue meaningful careers, and still many of them have achieved considerable success and recognition in their own fields. Again, unlike the women of the first wave of immigrants, Arab American women are very comfortable with their ethnicity. And because of that, they are eager to hang on to old customs and traditions, and to keep their ties with the Arab world. But the Arab American woman is also a realist, and she realizes that she has to forge a whole new identity for herself here in the United States. But she feels that she's in a position to choose the best of the two worlds. She wants an identity that would effectively and successfully link her past with her present. And so she is constantly searching for that common thread, the delicate balance between the two value systems, that of the Arab world as well as that of the American society that she has become part of. How successful was the Arab American woman in coping with all of the challenges that she has undertaken will be the subject of our panel this afternoon. And I would like to start out by asking Fadwa Elgindi, our first panelist, to give her presentation. Allow me to give you a very brief introduction. Fadwa is an anthropologist from Los Angeles. She taught at the University of California and at Los Angeles, and at the University of California, Southern California and Los Angeles as well. Currently, she is a lecturer on Arab society and culture at the Foreign Service Institute of the State Department. She is the co-founder of the Egyptian American Organization and a spokesperson for various Arab and Islamic groups in Los Angeles. Recently, Dr. Elgindi testified at the Los Angeles County Commission on Human Relations regarding Arab Americans and Muslim women in the workforce. Allow me to present to you Dr. Fadwa Elgindi.
Thank you. Thank you, Noah. It's really a great pleasure to be here and to be among so many Arab American women and so many Arab American men here in the room to listen about concerns that we all share. I think at this moment, I can't help but feel that we should all be inspired by the Palestinian women today in the uprising. It is remarkable, but we've had wars and confrontations in the area, and women were very much part of the front line, contrary to the image that gets weaved about us here. While you look at women who are even at the forefront of the feminist movement in this country, WASPs who very successfully led a very important and significant movement, who have never been on the front line, who have never carried a gun, who don't know what it means to carry a stone and throw it. They don't know what revolution really means, just because they've never had this fear, they never had the challenges that many of us had. I don't know, particularly the young Arab Americans would, maybe they are lucky not to have been in situations that we have been to, but many of us in Egypt and elsewhere did carry the gun, did go to the front, or tried. I was saved in 1956 because this is one time when America's interference saved my life. Just before I was sent to Port Said, the war stopped. But I volunteered, and the reason why I volunteered, as Nasser at the time says, the Arab cause is there, there's nothing we can do, the army is in Sinai, we got trapped, three big major countries attacked us, we need any volunteers, and the guns were on carts, donkey carts in the streets. And also we have training groups in the social clubs. You can go there and get trained. So I looked at my mother and told her, well, aren't you going to send Fathi, my brother? I'm the youngest of five, three men and two women. And she said, no, he'll die. And I said, okay. I walked out and volunteered. And after I became sergeant, my father and all three brothers volunteered. I'd like to speak a little bit about strengths of women because it is a very complex situation for us. Arab Americans, as Noah suggested, is a new identity, and the identity is very mixed at this point. We're really just information. There are many of us who are many generations old in this country, and others who just arrived 10 years ago. And if I remember, I've been here for 20 years, if I remember, 10 years you're still going through culture shock. 10 years you have not really decided what your attitude will be, and it's past the first decade almost that you begin to really establish a position, and even then it's still confusing. So the immigrant situation is a very difficult situation. Of course, it's very difficult for any group, but it's much more difficult for Arabs because of the political situation, because of the attitudes in America, and because of the Zionist attempts to keep the facts away from the public and the damaging imaging that keeps arising in the media all the time that we have to face and we become defensive about and powerless. And then some of us accept the image that gets formed about us. This is very, very sad, but it's very natural. And I think what we should be doing here after sessions like that is work on this. We don't accept the imaging of us. We develop our own image and we use our roots as the basis, and we should be proud of our heritage. And also, as Noah said very wisely, that we should take advantage of our rich bicultural situation. Let me just spend a few minutes on the idea of strengths. That is, I will talk about what are the strengths that are already built into our cultural heritage. Those of us who just came and those of us who are here before bring with them Arab cultural heritage. And with regard to women, what is it that they bring with? One of what I consider to be a really strong point is the idea of bonding. We come from the Arab setting, Arab societies, all of the Arab societies, with a very strong sense of bonding, particularly to two areas. We have a strong sense of bonding to the family, and even when we make the transition to immigrant culture, we maintain that, or we try to maintain that. And we also have a strong sense of bonding to our own sex. I think these are very crucial, and they are very different from Western culture. And in some cases, when we confront feminist movements here and situation, we forget that we already brought some strengths that American women are fighting for, and we start all over again as if we didn't have the strength, and what we needed to do is just build on it. What is this bonding with the family? We grow up knowing that this is where all our comfort, our support, our nourishment, our identity comes from, our names. And this is for men and women. There is an egalitarian system in the Arab world where the men and women maintain their identity, even though it is skewed toward the father, but it's still, and officially that is, the identity is the same for both men and women after marriage. And I think this is really not stressed enough. Some of us here superficially change our names upon marriage, but I think it is more superficial than real. There is a lot to naming in terms of identity. When you keep your own name, knowing that your brother did the same, it says something about your self-image and your strength. It's not that you don't know who you will be next. And I think if you were born in the system where you change your name, it does something to your identity. And I think that is very much part of the inner strength that Arab women seem to show. There is a tremendous inner strength in Arab women, regardless of what they do. Homemakers, sergeants in the army, professors, heads of chapters in feminist movements. There is tremendous inner strength. It may not come out. It may need some group to pull it out, but there is inner strength. The bonding in the family, as I said, is egalitarian. It is the identity for both men and women, and this is important, knowing that you are treated the way your brother is, even though there are some areas of lack of equality. But this family provides you with many of the things that when you come to the States, you find is provided by institutions, official institutions that you apply for or pay for. And one of the things that we were talking about casually outside is whereas an American person would have problems, then the first thing they do is call up and look for a shrink. And, you know, they go, or a counselor, and so on. And I tell her, until today, and it's 20 years, I find it funny because I grew up, when I have a problem, I go to my aunt. Or, you don't go to your shrink, you go to your aunt. And this is the same. Men go to each other or go to their mothers. And this is very important development of bonding. It starts from the moment of birth. One of the projects that I'm working on in now, a research project, is that idea of bonding and how it develops, and it affects the way you construct your world, and you remain strong because you know there's a support system behind you. Because this support system fell apart in the United States, much of this is done artificially by institutions that are not based on kinship. Not that they are not effective, I'm not saying that it's a different system, and we have to know that the two exist and what we're confronting. Just as we are born into this very strong family bond, where the individual immediately gets subsumed into becoming part of the group, and this is reflected in our last names, many of the last names, Al so and so, belonging to the group of, the family of, and this is for men and women. There is also the bonding that is with women, women for women and men for men. This is very Middle Eastern, very Arab, where we grow up liking our own sex and knowing that we identify with women in a very positive way. It's not that we are all competitors over men. This is not the cultural premise that exists in the Arab world, in the homeland. You grow up liking women and feeling comfort, and many women are much closer to their girlfriends, whether they are relatives or not, than their husbands. so that when they really have problems, they will go to their girlfriend. They will seek another woman for comfort. Now, this is a very crucial point, because we have to know that the feminist movement in this country, in very large part, was trying to solve the problems of women by creating groups that would do that. And American women were having great difficulty doing it because they had no base to identify with each other. The heterosexual unit was so strong in the system that a woman grows up gearing herself to a male as opposed to a female, and in order to gear herself to the female, it has to be done through what the consciousness-raising groups and awareness groups. And I was here during the birth of the recent feminist movement in the late 60s. I'm very happy to have been to experience such, I think, a very important, one of the most important revolutions today. It really did affect American society. It changed the consciousness of people. It made Abdin Jabbar apologize, and it raised the awareness for men and women. I think it was very good for men and women. But a large part of it was the women discovered that they don't talk to each other. They have no basis, a social organizational principle that would allow them to talk to each other. Well, Arab women already have that, because what they do is, yeah, they talk to their husband, they have a fight, they dismiss that, they dial, you talk on the phone here, phones don't work back home, but, you know, you talk on the phone, and this is bonding. This is exactly what should be done. This is not a waste of time. This is networking, and it's politics. It is sexual politics. And in the end, when you really need help, when somebody dies, when a crisis happens, all this works for that. There is support, there is love, there is real care, because the competitive element was removed from the same sex. Now, when we come to this country, we are challenged because the system doesn't work exactly the same way. And some of us may be driven to the existing system, lose the strengths, and then look again for a network and create artificial bonds with people, which would be a waste of time. So I very much recommend that we build on these strengths. The kind of bonding that we come up with is very natural. We grow up with it. Believe me, on the seventh day, when they do that subuh, I'm sure it's all over the Arab world, the Yom al-Saba, and they, in Egypt, they put them in a sieve, and then they beat a brass mortar and pestle, and all of this is the love of the family and the love of the same sex. And I must stress that this bonding among women is not necessarily feminist, which is a big important difference, and it's not necessarily sex-oriented. That is, it's not a marked thing to turn this love into lesbianism. In the Arab world, lesbianism is not a institutionalized, it's not a big, as an anthropologist, I can compare with many other cultures, it is not an important phenomenon there, it has not developed this direction, which is interesting. That is, it is interesting that in the Arab world, the women learn to love each other, but that love is not expressed in terms of sexuality. Sexuality is still geared toward the males and the males toward the females, but the bonding exists, and it's possible. I think what is with the American system is that love is always translated sexually, and so part, a strong part of the feminist movement turned lesbian, whether they do have this, because they need to identify with women, and what other language is there, since this is a dominant view. I think the strength in the Arab world is that you have the choice. Of course, if you guys want to be lesbians or whatever, you can do that. It's that's your choice. But I'm suggesting that when I say the love of women, you have to know that. I'm always asked, do you mean they are lesbians or gay? No, it is not a marked thing in the Arab world. No, they are not lesbians. And the bonding is more that of womanhood rather than lesbianism or feminist, because feminist is a consciousness that happens in revolutionary context, and this is not the kind of strength that I'm talking about. So what are some of the challenges? You bring with you this kind of strength, which has also, by the way, inbuilt weaknesses. I will not build a rosy picture about the love of the family, because what is also very distinctive about the Arab system, the Arab cultural system, is that it's this same group that you love, the family, the same group that provides you with everything, social security, the disability, automatic. This is the group that gives you all this help and support. You can depend on it. You don't have to, if you don't work, you know very well that there's somebody in the family who's going to be taking care of you. Don't go and fill forms or anything like that. Okay, going along with that, research shows that this is also the area where most of the oppression takes place, so that it's the same people who love you and provide you with all the supports that tend to oppress the women. And I think this is important. That is, most of the problems that exist for women happen in situations of marriage or situation of domestic or an oppressive father or an unenlightened brother who misuse the rules and abuse the culture and take advantage of the woman. The good side of this is that once you overcome this barrier, the system itself is not that discriminating. And I have many cases in Egypt where women have got scholarships to leave the country, let's say to the United States, and they were married, and in order to leave at that time, they had to have the signature of their husbands. They got the signature, they went to the States and started studying, and then the husband, it got to him, my God, what did I do? I sent her there, where is she, what's she doing? She changed his mind, he goes to the embassy, I want her back. The embassy says, sorry, you have no control over her. They check the university, see how well she's doing, is there progress, and once the international center or the center for foreign students, whatever it is in the university, tell him that she's doing fine, the embassy would tell the husband, sorry, but we want her to get her PhD. In other words, when it comes to the system, the large system, she gets protected, which I think is the opposite of this country. So that's part of the challenges. You come here and you find that discrimination is at the level of society, not necessarily at the level of the home. You go out and you find that you are occupying positions of a secondary status. You are paid less even when you do the same work. You are imaged in a certain way. And in addition to being a woman, you are an Arab. Now that's the pit. So you are an Arab, and you have to suffer from all the bad images about who the Arabs are. They are terrorists, they are oversexed belly dancers. Look at them, they're black hair and they belly dance, so obviously they are available sexually to any man passing by. And all these images and set attitudes that make it very difficult for women to work professionally in some areas. And I'm talking about large scale, because in this testimony that I just made, I had to go over case by case from the office at the ADC by telephone, long distance. You may make up for that. I got case by and they were very revealing what the Arab women have to face. But I'll tell you, it's bad to be Arab and it's bad to be women, but can you also imagine being Arab woman and Muslim? Now that's it. Because the Americans here in the American society has the image that at least if you're Christian, then maybe there is hope. And and of course, we have to remember that during colonial days, one of the best weapons that the colonial rule has was divide on the basis of religion. I'm not denying that certain conflicts did exist, but nothing at the scale that happened in the Arab world since colonialism. Much of the rift between Muslims and Christians, all that is an artificial creation of colonial powers, part of the divide and rule, and we fell in it because we are human and we are powerless, and it became a reality and ugly, and this is not the Middle East. The Middle East invented
Turn your tape over at this time for continuation of the presentation.